Political correctness is a concept associated often with liberals and often criticized from the right. College campuses are becoming common sites for tug-of-wars between free speech and the belief that campuses should be safe spaces for students from various backgrounds.
You might remember that earlier this year, students organized a protest against conservative public speaker Ben Shapiro's appearance at UW-Madison. Students who opposed his speech on campus said that Shapiro denied the, quote, realities of systemic and institutional violence against different races, religions, and sexual orientations. And critics of the student protesters argued that the effort denied Shapiro and conservative groups free speech.
Our next guest says that political correctness isn't the only story. He says that the right also has its own way of regulating what's an appropriate way to behave or what's acceptable to say. He calls it patriotic correctness.
Alex Norasta joins us now. He's the immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank. His article for the Washington Post on patriotic correctness is posted on Central Time's Facebook page. Alex, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Alex, why do you think that what you call patriotic correctness is a conservative counterpoint to the left's political correctness?
Well, it's a certain mode of speech and acceptable behavior, but it seems to be particular to those on the political right, and what is acceptable and not acceptable for them is very different than what it is for other groups in society, in particular, different than what it is for liberals. And what's interesting is everybody seems to be aware of the left-wing variety of political correctness, but when it comes to talking about the right-wing variety, the patriotic correctness side, almost nobody is aware of it, especially those people on the political right. So I wanted to write a piece basically illustrating that and showing that both of these political tribes have their own form of correctness, and they're just a stifling of debate.
Can you give us a few examples of patriotic correctness in action?
Yeah, I think one of the examples is the so-called war on Christmas. It's this idea that whenever you say Merry Christmas to somebody, they're going to be offended by it, and there's a war on that, and that's why people are saying Happy Holidays, which I don't know if you're in your personal experience is, but in mine, everybody says Merry Christmas, and I've never seen anybody get upset by somebody saying Happy Holidays. I think another sort of double standard is the common phrase or the common idea amongst the patriotically correct that unionized public employees are bad, and especially bad when they can't be fired, except for police and border patrol, which they sort of hold up on this higher plane of existence. So both of these, I think, are prime examples. I think another one is the recent outburst about Colin Kaepernick, who is the football player who, instead of standing for the national anthem, he decided to sit and then kneel. And then people got online and were burning his jerseys and having big temper tantrums on YouTube about it.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. We have a clip of one of the responses that you're talking about there. As you said, he was famously criticized also by conservative commentator Tommy Lahren. And here's what she had to say.
He's in a corner kneeling by himself. Why does that offend you so much?
For me, I know what that flag means to me. I know what that flag means to those that are fighting for our country right now. It's bigger than a piece of cloth. It's a symbol of patriotism. Our national anthem has meant a lot to a lot of people. It's got a lot of people through very hard times. And this country, it's got its scars, it's got its wounds, it's got its history. But I still believe it's the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And I believe if you live in this country, you can want to better it. But to disrespect our flag and our anthem in that way and that be your outlet to get out whatever aggression you have, whether it be passive or active aggression, I disagree with it.
And Alex, what do you make of Lahren's argument there?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with disagreeing with the form of protest that that person took. But the notion that this is somehow disrespectful to everybody who's ever served in the military or is disrespectful to the country as a whole, or that you don't want to better it by not standing during the national anthem is kind of an extreme leap of logic. And it's more just an emotional reaction, I think, to people perceived insult that has triggered a lot of Tommy especially has triggered her. to have an outburst in that kind of way. And it's frankly, it's kind of childish and pathetic. It reminds me of a lot of these people on college campuses, these kids that you mentioned, who get really upset when people don't use the right pronoun or there's a perceived injustice against a race that are just silly. So it's just, it's a childish sort of response that cuts to the core of a lot of people's beliefs, and it is very present amongst the political right as much as in the left.
Now, a response that you might take as silly or childish is one thing. You could almost put that in the category of annoyance. But do you think there's real harm done by what you call stifling this kind of discourse?
I think it's stifling in that it limits the type of debate that people can have. It limits the type of debate over, for instance, a lot of the issues that Colin Kaepernick was protesting. We see it with sort of the criticism of the Black Lives Matter movement, which is, of course, far from perfect and open to a lot of criticisms. But the notion that by saying Black Lives Matter means that non-Black Lives Matter is sort of a criticism that you hear on the right, but then in the same notion, a lot of these groups have support the Blue Lives Matter movement, which they don't think means that police lives matter more than other people's lives, but they sort of go to the extreme reaction on the other side, which is just as flawed and just as insular as the critics.
I want to take a caller now. We've got Saeed on the line in Green Bay. Saeed, hi.
Hello. I think your guest here is mistaking expression of opinion with suppression of debate. I don't see conservatives lining up in American universities trying to disinvite liberal speakers. But Ian Hirsi Ali, an expert in the treatment of women in Islam, cannot go on American campuses and talk about it because the politically correct crowd will label her as an Islamophobe. The story is well summarized in the letter of acceptance to the University of Chicago sent to its entering class today. That tells you the difference between suppression of debate and the expression of opinion.
All right, Saeed, thanks. What do you think about that, Alex?
So I think that's a good point, but it draws an important distinction. I think the politically correct are very good at punishing people who disagree with them. The patriotically correct, though, are very good at protecting their own favored classes of people from normal laws and normal prosecution. And a great example of this is the very, very high burdens for prosecuting police officers who are in a protected political class, especially amongst sort of conservatives. And it's very difficult in law to prosecute them for the commission of crimes, whereas if you or I or anybody else had done them, it would be very easy to prosecute them. So while leftists are very good at trying to punish and exclude people who disagree with them, like on college campuses, I think the patriotically correct are very good at protecting their favored groups of people from prosecution and other laws.
We're talking with Alex Norasta right now. He is the immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian think tank, talking about his idea of patriotic correctness, which would be the parallel to political correctness on the left. So this would be for the conservative, for the right, he says, use a form of patriotic correctness, which is stifling. And Alex, is there a point where institutions should be able to draw a line in order to serve its students? Should a speaker that has made racist, maybe homophobic remarks be allowed on a campus where there are students of color or LGBT students?
I think that free expression and free debate should be allowed. I mean, these people like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, by and large, are invited by student groups who want to hear what she has to say. And there shouldn't be any kind of rules limiting that unless that person is specifically trying to start violence. But that is up to the institution themselves. But generally, people have very thin skins on college campuses, and they should get over it. That's one of the points of being in college, is being able to engage with different ideas. And by building a safe space where you're not allowed to do that, you limit your learning, you limit your knowledge, and you have silly ideas that persist about the other side. But it's similar on the right wing or the conservative perspective of things. I mean, all you need to do is take a look at a lot of the patriotically correct echo chambers on places like talk radio or elsewhere. Not this talk radio, but other talk radios elsewhere, or on the comment sections of other websites where there's safe spaces and they're not allowed to make sort of certain comments that go outside of bounds. So It's very obviously on display in a lot of college campuses, not all of them, but there are many other institutions in society that are patriotically correct as well.
You've also criticized the persistent idea of American exceptionalism in your piece. Why do you think that's problematic?
Well, it's not American exceptionalism that I think is a problem. I do think America is an exceptional country in a lot of ways, but it's the expression of it. It's the idea that you have to sort of have this chest-beating chauvinism wherever you are around the world, like such as dealing with diplomats, like the Obama administration dealing with foreign officials, instead of doing a chest-beating nationalism, perhaps being kind or deferential to people on their own soil, is not a sign of national weakness or not an admission that America is not a great country. It's just being polite when you're in another place. And if you recall, the Obama administration was criticized numerous times for being deferential to foreign officials in foreign countries from this sort of patriotically correct perspective. And that's just it's just simply not a good interpretation of what was going on at the time.
And Alex, as we wrap up, I mean, are both patriotic correctness and political correctness symptoms of a polarized country that have trouble agreeing on something universal, like a fact?
I think it's. I do think it is related to that, but I also want to say that every sort of political tribe or every movement, cultural movement or religious movement, has its own form of correctness. If you go to church, there are certain topics that are widely debated and accepted. There are others that are not. In your social groups, at work, and in political parties and political debate, it's no different. The only difference, I think, is that most people on the political right don't know that they have their own form of correctness, while everybody knows that the left wing does.
Alex, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Alex Narasta, the immigration policy analyst at the Cato Institute, talking about his notion of patriotic correctness.
Coming up after the news, we'll look at the rise of stop and frisk policing in America and what the future might hold for the controversial police tactic. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.